And now, The Mentors, one of the most popular and unique shows on the radio today. Each week, one of our four remarkable CEOs, including Tom Lord, John Phillips, and Rick Brutico, will challenge your thinking about life and work. Sought after for their success and for consistently putting people first, treating employees and customers with respect, and helping others succeed, now these same CEOs, the mentors, want to help you achieve your highest level of profitability, success, and personal fulfillment in life, at work, and in business. Now, here's your mentor.
Welcome. I am Tom Loy, and I will be your host today. Thank you for joining us. Today, our guest mentor is Rodney Pierre Antoine, an educational entrepreneur who is today, as executive director of Lumen Christi Academies, is responsible for guiding and growing seven preschool to eighth grade schools in Northern California, covering some of the inner city as well. As an educator, Rodney is the ultimate mentor. We can all learn from him, and most of us can learn from educators like Rodney because they're responsible, along with the parents, for the future and quality of our culture and our nation's standing in the world. As Henry Adams once said, a teacher affects eternity. He can never tell where his influence stops. Today, Rodney is going to give us a peek into the challenges of an educator, what they face today, the challenges they have, particularly some of the challenges in the inner city with the kids that are preschool to K-8, or preschool to 8. I'm used to saying K to 8. But more importantly than that, what he's learned and what works with students, and what I think probably can work for parents as well. Welcome, Rodney. Thank you for sharing your time. And let's get started by telling us about what are the top concerns as an educator that you have today with these young kids?
Well, thanks for having me, Tom. In terms of top concerns, I'd say there's a priority being pushed on social emotional learning in our classrooms. So often you hear talk of students not feeling safe or not feeling safe physically, but also emotionally, and maybe they're coming home to their family saying, you know, I'm being bullied and such. So, you know, we've seen the tragedies play out in our high schools and in our middle schools, and honestly, it's about creating a safe environment in the classrooms and providing students the social emotional learning that used to take place at home. You know, ways to help students manage their emotions, helping kids set goals for themselves, things that the family used to traditionally do that we now have to find ways to do that in the context of the school day. And what I've come to find out is that the schools and the classrooms and the leaders that are able to prioritize that social emotional learning within their curricular programs are the ones that set up their students to thrive.
So what is social emotional learning? What are their courses or behavior? Tell me a little bit about how you do that.
Yeah, you know, I just think about the values and that were instilled by our parents when we were younger, the sense of empathy, an awareness of what others are going through, a sense of connection, cultivating and nurturing relationships with your peers. These are things that I think our generation and past generations take for granted, that, you know, through socialization, kids just naturally had. Nowadays, you know, our kids are being socialized by the latest device in their hands, and they don't have that interpersonal connection. And then they're placed in a school setting where they have to relate to one another. You know, I spent my summer outside playing with my friends in the neighborhood. We would meet up at the park and just play, and we learned to solve our conflicts. We learned to understand where one another were coming from, and our students today don't have those same experiences. They're so sheltered from interactions outside of their family. So in the context of a school day, it looks like kids in a classroom spending time in a circle, sharing how they're feeling, sharing their struggles, voicing the goals that they've established, whether they be academic or personal goals, and the work that they're doing towards getting there. It also might take the form of conflict resolution. When there's a conflict between peers, how can the teacher facilitate a process in which that conflict is resolved in a positive, a formative way?
So this is, as you're talking, I'm thinking back in my childhood, mm-hmm. and I'm having a hard time grasping a lot of this, and I'm sure I'm not different from other people that are older. As you said, you heard the term snowflakes, and we're too soft, and you're talking about some soft things. And I remember in the area where I grew up, which was north of Chicago, there was a bully in our neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And for the most part, we pretty much avoided the guy, except one time we all beat him up just to get even. But there's obviously a change that's taken place. What is it? What is that change that's led to this isolation, that's led to where the bullies are really, it sounds like there are many more numerous bullies today than, and of course, getting ready for life, you get out of school, you're going to deal with some bullies. I deal with bullies still.
So if you think about the root cause of a bully, it's insecurities, right? That kid who you guys handled in Chicago was probably a kid who was struggling with some things personally or at home, just dealing with some internal challenges, and the way in which that child remedied it was to seek out harm to others so that they could kind of release some of the frustrations that they had. Well, I think nowadays our kids are dealing with so much more trauma than ever before, and they're not able to process it. So if they don't have any support to processing those internal challenges, then they're going to project it in inappropriate behaviors. And I think the number of bullying or cases of bullying that surface, I think it's a byproduct of the challenges that kids are facing each and every day that we didn't used to, whether it be broken homes, whether it be issues of poverty, what have you. I think kids are walking around with a lot more challenges, internal challenges, than ever before, and aren't as resilient or able to resolve those challenges, and which naturally leads to conflict.
So there's an important lesson there for not just for parents and for educators, but I'm thinking now about the corporate world and the business world. I've met bullies along the way, and I've come to the same conclusion that they're insecure, and the bullying is just, it's a way of keeping people away from them and dominating, so that whatever it is that's bothering them, this is an important lesson. A lot of people don't understand that. I suspect some of this has to do with the breakdown of the family. We're seeing more of this.
I would definitely agree with that, and I think in the context of me as an educator, our role is to try to remedy it. To remedy it on both sides, to really see what the root problem is for the child who is bullying, but then also for the one who's being victimized, how can we strengthen them and also instill a sense of awareness of what's happening.
We gotta go to break. Hang on, everybody. We're gonna come back and talk to Rodney Pierre Antoine, the executive director of Lumen Christi Academies, about things he's learned in the classroom that we can take into the world and help with our career. This is Tom Laurie, and this is The Mentors Radio.
And now, back to The Mentors, where remarkable CEOs challenge your thinking about life and business.
Welcome back. This is Tom Laurie with today's guest mentor, Rodney Pierre Antoine, an educational entrepreneur who is today as executive director of Lumen Christi Academies, building a startup in some way of a school system. And we were just talking about bullying in the last segment. I want to come back to that, Rodney, because you're dealing with EQ. And there's a lot being written in the business world today that it's not IQ, but EQ mm-hmm. that is the foundation for success. So as we're talking about these things and the bullying and all this stuff, I want to, when we're going to come back to the kids, but there's some important lessons, I think, for adults to learn from all of this.
Absolutely. I think at the heart of EQ is being able to be relational. How do you cultivate positive relationships with the people around you? How do you have a sense of empathy for what others are going through? How can you manage your emotions? And then also an awareness of how others manage theirs. How aware are you of triggers within your community, and recognizing as a member of a community, your responsibility is to uplift and to bring out the best in your neighbors. And I think these are kind of the mindsets that we're trying to instill in our classroom space, so that everyone is kind of working collaboratively towards a common goal.
And I would think with the breakdown of the family, a lot of the burden has shifted from the family unit to the schools to resolve some of this. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, I think our parents nowadays, for a variety of reasons, don't have the time or don't make the time to be able to support the formation of their child, right? Whether it's a two-parent household or a broken home where priorities are shifted or time stretched. I often say time is our most precious commodity, and our families don't often make the necessary time to support their children. So that leaves it up to us as educators to be able to fill in that gap and provide the support, like I said, historically that may have been provided at home. We can't just say, oh, this isn't being taken care of at home and just leave it be. No, we've got to take action and be able to fill in whatever gaps may exist.
Well, I know you're going to talk a little bit about loving them up and a way to get
Absolutely.
To kids. So I know you're going to get to. So one of the things you trigger for me as you're talking is that I've learned over the years that the greatest, this is what we all lose sight of. The greatest sign of your love for another human being is giving them your time. When we spend time with another human being, because it is the greatest resource that we have and very limited, time limited, giving of that is the greatest gift we can give to another human being. And I was a single parent, and I know as a single parent, one of the things I learned is making sure you can give them all the toys you want, but when you give them your time, that's the real sign of love.
I absolutely wholeheartedly agree with that. And kids are so receptive to that when you see when they see how much you care in your gift of time, right? You know, there's a saying, tell me where you spend your time and I'll tell you what you value. I remember being a new principal. I was 30 years old, and parents would come to me often and say they'd use me as a threat to their kids. You know, if you don't do this, I'm going to have to talk to Mr. PA about it. And the one thing that I was trying to tell my parents at the time at the school is, one, please don't use me as the bad guy. And two, the only reason that I have an influence on your child is because I spend time with them. I'm spending time with them during morning recess, during lunch recess. When I hear about their games, CYO basketball game, I'm there cheering them on. And through that genuine gift of time, there's a connection. So what I always encourage our families is to make sure you prioritize family times. Carve out time to connect with your kids, because it's through those connections that you'll be able to leverage some really a sense of connection, and they'll be able to listen to you so much more because they know that you value them because of the way you prioritize your time.
This is Tom Laurie. You're listening to the Mentors Radio Show. Our guest mentor today is educational entrepreneur Rodney Pierre Antoine. And you come from an intact family.
I do. I'm grateful for that.
But one that went through some great challenges. Tell us a little bit about your story on how you how your parents found their way to the United States and your educational background.
So my parents are immigrants from Haiti. First generation Haitian American. My brother and I are. They immigrated from Haiti, kind of fleeing some political persecution from Papadoc Duvalier in the early 70s, and they fled Haiti and settled in D.C. My brother and I were born in the mid-70s, and as we were being raised in D.C. at the time, D.C. was, you know, murder capital of the world, and D.C. public schools were really really poor, to say the least. And I'll never forget this. My dad and my mom didn't know much. They weren't highly educated, but they knew that the DC public schools weren't providing what we needed, and they used a friend of a friend's address to get us into Montgomery County public school system, and that changed our life trajectory. My brother now is a practicing lawyer, and I've been an educator all my life, and the life trajectory that we were on, or that we continue to be on, I think goes back to one, them chasing the American dream to immigrate to the United States and flee the political unrest in Haiti, but then two, also the education piece that they were able to put us on an equitable playing field to receive just a phenomenal public education that has made all the difference in the world.
So you went to school in the D.C. schools, then you went up to Montgomery County, which is in Maryland.
Yes.
And there was quite a contrast
between
the two of them. And you also had a mayor in D.C. that was selling dope, as I recall.
Or using it.
You had a lot of things going on in D.C. I don't think D.C.'s changed much, but that's a lot of dopes there. But anyways, contrast the change you saw from D.C. to Montgomery County.
You know, it was my first lesson in inequity. Here you have a public education system, two public schools that we went to, serving. I was in second grade at the time, and my brother and I were English language learners. We didn't speak any English. You know, after a year of being in D.C., we still didn't speak any English. When we started going to Montgomery County's public schools, within a year and a half, both my brother and I had tested out of the English as a Second and Other Language program. It was night and day in terms of how we were treated, the way in which the teachers related to us, and also just the structure of the classrooms. It was a happy, positive environment that enabled us to thrive. And the last piece I'll say is my brother had a learning disability. He was a resource student, and he was actually able to receive the services that were due to him, and was able to navigate school through the supports provided. And the only difference was the school system.
And you said that he is an attorney today, right?
He's a practicing attorney. And that's having a diagnosed learning disability, and the public school system that we went through didn't allow that to be a barrier for his growth. And again, grateful for that experience and grateful for the decision that my parents made way back when.
Well, we're gonna come back and talk some more about your journey. We're with Rodney Pierre-Antoine, the Executive Director of Lumen Christi Academies. And this is the Mentors Show, and we'll be back in a minute.
Merci.
And now, back to the Mentors, where remarkable CEOs challenge your thinking about life and business.
Welcome back. This is Tom Laurie with today's guest mentor, Rodney Pierre-Antoine, an educational entrepreneur, and we're talking about the critical importance of knowledge for creating better possibilities in career and personal growth. We're delighted with the response that our show has received. If you missed any of this show or any previous episodes, you can download our podcast by going to our website, thementorsradio.com. That is thementorsradio.com. Remember to subscribe while you're there so you do not miss any future shows. All of our content is available for free. So, great story about your young, as a young person in Maryland and D.C. But somewhere along the line, and tell us a little bit more about CYO basketball, where that fit in, where you went to college, and then Teach America.
Okay, sure. So I started coaching CYO basketball in my parish When I was 18, I actually was too young to coach. My brother technically was the coach on record. He was 21, but I was the one who coached. There were a group of kids who I was helping out in an after-school program and tutoring them in after-school, and they had asked me to coach. And between the after-school tutoring and the coaching, that was when I kind of caught the education bug, realizing that I had the ability to be able to help kids see that they had more potential than they were aware of, whether with their math homework or with their skills on the basketball court. And I just kind of, the more I did it, the more I realized, wow, not only am I able to help these students move forward or these basketball players get better, but I also enjoyed it. And to think that this could be a profession, a vocation, I was like, I was hooked. I came home and I think somewhere along the lines, might have been my sophomore year in college, I told my parents, hey, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to be a teacher. And at which point my dad quickly said, we did not bring you here to this country to teach. You must be a doctor or a lawyer or something. So they put the kibosh on that. My brother was going to be going into law school, and they had figured that was going to be the pathway that I'd follow as well. Fast forward to my senior year at University of Maryland College Park, I hear about this program called Teach for America, where they were recruiting recent college graduates who didn't necessarily graduate with an education degree to commit to teaching 2 years in under-resourced inner-city areas, and went through the application process and eventually got in, and I was able to break the news to my parents and said, hey, I ended up finding a job as a teacher, and Teach for America placed me in West Oakland, and the rest in this ministry is history.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned how your parents were wanting to channel you into another profession. An important lesson there for everybody, and that is there's a number of people who have written about how we're held hostage to the things that our parents wanted us to do.
Yeah.
And typically when we run into some type of a brick wall in our career, and I can tell you many stories of people I've met over the years because of the work I do for people that have lost their jobs, where they hit the brick wall and they come in and say, you know, I never really liked that. That wasn't where my heart was. But you're one of the lucky ones. You were able to, first of all, you weren't being held hostage to the past. You were able to break a new one and follow your passion. They were very fortunate.
I was, and I'm indebted to Teach for America for providing the doorway for me to discover my life's passion and work. You know, for the past 20 years, I haven't worked a day. I've been in ministry, and it's I wake up every morning thrilled for what the day holds, and you know, I think that I'm sure I can make a lot more money doing something else, but I don't think anything could make me as happy and as fulfilled as I feel each day as an educator.
This is Tom Laurie. You're listening to the Mentors Radio Show. Our guest mentor today is educational entrepreneur Rodney Pierre Antoine. Now, you mentioned about a couple of things. Number one, it sounds like what you've discovered is a vocation rather
Absolutely.
Than a job.
Absolutely.
Why don't you explain for the audience the difference between a vocation and a job?
So I think... I believe that each of us we're blessed with gifts and talents, and I think our gifts and talents that we have are given to benefit others and to benefit the world and to be additive. And I think part of what we're doing is trying to discover those gifts and talents and also discovering where we can utilize them in the service of others. And for me, That's through education. For me, it's helping teachers, helping parents, and helping students be the best versions of themselves, and especially helping them each stakeholder group recognize what their gifts and talents are. It's not something, you know, I do for a paycheck. It's something that I do for my kind of life fulfillment.
Tell us. You got into Teach America. For those that aren't aware of Teach America, tell us about what Teach America is all about and what it's doing.
So Teach for America is placing recent college graduates in schools where they're sometimes having difficulty recruiting teachers. And one of the challenges for me with going into it is yes, I had passion. Yes, I was able to naturally connect with students, but I didn't have the pedagogical chops and the skills to be able to engage a classroom setting and to really provide students what they needed. And the idea that Teach for America stands on is that, you know, you can have these really passionate young men and women who will put in the time and the work to hone in their craft while they're studying how to be a teacher. And what I found in Oakland was a classroom of students who, one, were incredibly patient with me, more often than not, but also who taught me so much, about myself and were incredibly patient, allowing me to learn the craft alongside them. You know, I didn't teach my first year class nearly as much as I did, say, by my year three or four class, but I loved my kids wholeheartedly and worked tirelessly for them. And because of that sense of commitment, they still were able to grow during that first year of teaching, despite the challenges.
Now, you had a couple of mentors along the way that helped you in the classroom. Let's talk a little bit about those folks.
Sure, absolutely. I was struggling as a first year teacher, as most first year teachers do, and I had Cheryl Wilson. She was my math coach, and Cheryl would come into my classroom and do model lessons for me. And that was when I realized, oh my goodness, when the kids aren't listening, it's not because of them; it's actually because of me. Because she came into that classroom and she was brilliant, and really brought out the best of them. And having her be present to give me constructive feedback along the way was huge, and really stimulated my professional growth. The other one was Barbara J. Mims, my principal at Hoover, where I taught for 6 years. Mrs. Mims, from her, I learned the importance of high expectations, and also the importance of patience, because she was incredibly patient with me. She could have easily, after a couple of months, said, "Oh, this guy is not going to work out." But alas, she saw the potential and then also invested the time in my formation as a new teacher.
Let's hold on to that. I want to come back to your mentors. When we return, top educator Rodney Pierre-Antoine will continue with lessons he's learned by being in the classroom with young children and the work that he's doing as Executive Vice President of Lumen Christi. If you have any questions or feedback, call anytime at 844-810-8255. That is 844-810-TALK. This is Tom Laurie, and this is the Mentors Radio.
And now, back to the Mentors, where remarkable CEOs challenge your thinking about life and business.
Welcome back. This is Tom Laurie with today's guest mentor, Rodney Pierre-Antoine, an educational entrepreneur who is the executive director of Lumen Christi Academies, is talking to us about what we can learn from children in preschool to eighth grade. In the last segment, Rodney, we were talking about your mentors, and there's a couple of things that stick in my mind about mentors. One, with Cheryl Wilson, you talked, apparently she had some training programs. Tell us about, you did some things that were unusual to help yourself and grow yourself.
Yeah, so, you know, really committed to continual improvement and knowing that where you are today isn't where you're going to be tomorrow. And Mrs. Mims, our principal, invested a lot of her dollars from her budget in professional development for the staff. So Cheryl Wilson was a coach through the Math Matters program and signed us up for it. And that meant that, you know, on Saturdays, two Saturdays every month, I was in a professional development session with Cheryl and the Math Matters coaches. She would provide constructive feedback through our observations of my class, and that's when I learned the importance of being a reflective practitioner, to be able to look at myself critically and to see where are my growth edges, and then to take steps towards addressing those areas and filling in those gaps. So Cheryl was instrumental in that, without a doubt.
Now, these are all lessons that all of us, regardless of what our vocation is, can learn from. I mean, your story is a story we can all relate to, in terms whether you're working at, you know, Apple or some other place around the country. These are things that are very important. You also mentioned, I'd heard you talk earlier about, before the show, about Barbara Mims and setting of expectations.
Yeah, so I think sometimes in our society we're not always honest and transparent with folks, right? And Mrs. Mims didn't have any problem letting us know if our bulletin board wasn't where it needed to be, if our classroom management wasn't to the caliber, if our school or transitions with our students weren't where they needed to be. She was really honest and open. But then she also was affirming, and would embrace positive reinforcement to help motivate us to be better. She forged really strong relationships with the students, encouraged us to make home visits, and I realized that, you know what, if I could follow her lead, then I could connect with my classroom the students in my classroom the way she connected with all the students in the school. If I could connect with my parents in the classroom, then I could have the same kind of relationships that Ms. Mims seemed to have with everyone who walked into that building. And as I transitioned from the classroom to school leadership, I realized that, you know what, I had a great mentor to follow, and I've always tried to forge really strong relationships with all the stakeholders in my building, and then also commit a strong commitment to continual improvement and growth for the teachers in my building.
So, in the work, what you learned from Cheryl Wilson, from what I understand from your background, is as you started to employ these techniques and things, that your students started to crush it.
They crushed it.
And then you went on to become a leader in the educational process in the school as a result.
Yeah, I mean, best practices work when they're effectively implemented, and she kind of showed us a pathway to how to engage students effectively, but also how to build students' confidence and establish a really rich classroom culture focused on excellence, and our students thrived, and I've just taken that formula wherever I've gone.
Well, these are great lessons again for anybody, regardless of what you're doing, your line of work, the culture. I would assume too that in getting these kids, you talk about loving them up, and there's a lot in there with developing trust. And these are kids in some of the schools you're competing with the gangs, where they're looking for people to be with that they can trust because of the breakdown of the family. Could you just talk just briefly about that?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think if students aren't getting what they naturally need, a sense of connection at the home or in the home, they're going to seek it elsewhere. And there are positive places that can provide that can fill in that gap, and there's some that are negative as well. So if you think about gang culture, I mean, what the gangs are providing students is a sense of connection, a sense of familial ties, and a sense of belonging. And I think if we can offer that in the context of a school, in the context of a classroom, then we can really bring out the best of the students entrusted to our care, and then also set them up for just a lifelong success, because they'll have these values that'll be instilled within that no one can take away from them.
This is Tom Laurie. You're listening to the Mentors Radio Show. Our guest mentor today is educational entrepreneur Rodney Pierre Antoine. Now, so you've talked about culture, you've talked about trust. Everything you're talking about plays out in a any kind of an organization.
Absolutely.
And then you mentioned that the kids aren't getting what they need naturally. They're going to go somewhere else and get it. That's true of adults, isn't it?
Absolutely. And even in the work that we're doing, it's critical that as school leaders that we are – we're mindful of the culture, the professional culture that we're cultivating, so that if you don't cultivate a positive culture, it's really easy for a toxic one to surface. You know, so we really need to make sure that everyone's getting what they need. And ultimately, that's what equity is about, right? Getting a sense of what the needs are within your building or your company, and making sure that you provide the resources that those individuals need, so that they can be best positioned to thrive.
I mean, it's the responsibility, once the resources and everything to thrive is on the child or the adult, right? But you talked about this atmosphere of love and trust and all of that, which many times when you get out of school, it's a hard thing to find in the hard world, right?
Yeah, but I bet you those companies that thrive really have rich culture where folks really, really have a sense of connection.
Now, so along the way, you met your wife, and that...
Thank goodness for that.
Led to an epiphany that took you out of the, tell it a little bit, you went out of the educational world and went somewhere else, thought you were going to make more money. Tell us a little bit, 2 minutes, and tell us about that.
Living in the Bay Area, my wife and I, we met as new teachers at New Teacher Orientation, and we helped each other out, volunteered in each other's classrooms, and really kind of grew together as young adults, but also as educators. And when it became clear that, you know what, we were going to get married, I realized two teachers living in the Bay Area wasn't going to make it. So she was an education major from BC, and she was passionate about education, and education is something that I kind of fell into. And I thought, okay, let me get a corporate gig. And I ended up working in marketing for the Wall Street Journal in the city. And I often say, you know, if I had just gotten that job right out of college, I could have easily been very comfortable. But after a year of being at the Wall Street Journal, I found myself missing my classroom, missing my kids, missing my community. And after a year of being at the Journal, I returned back to my Teach for America placement site at Hoover Elementary, where I served as fifth grade teacher for another 4 years. And, you know, grateful for that.
Well, we've got one more segment. We have come back and talked to Rodney Pierre Antoine about his life as an educational entrepreneur. Like us on Facebook at thementorsradio.com. You will find all of our show notes and links at thementorsradio.com. This is Tom Laurie, and this is The Mentors Radio.
And now, back to The Mentors, where remarkable CEOs challenge your thinking about life and business.
Welcome back. This is Tom Laurie with today's guest mentor, Rodney Pierre Antoine, an educational entrepreneur who is executive director of Lumen Christi Academies. We've talked a lot about education and how it relates to organizations and companies and all of that. And now we're going to shift gears a little bit now. I'm going to have Rodney tell us a little bit about his experience at the University of Notre Dame, a very important mentor there. And then I want him to tell us about the work he's doing at Lumen Christi.
Awesome. Thank you, Tom. Father Ron Nuzzi was the program director of the Remick Leadership Program when I received my master's in ed leadership from the University of Notre Dame. Go Irish. He was so inspirational and formational for me as a school leader. He had the saying that he told us, the lukewarm go elsewhere, and really, really imprinted in us the importance of being a pastoral, a spiritual, and an instructional leader all in one, and to cultivate strong, positive relationships within our schools. And that's kind of driven me as a school leader and now as a network level leader. As executive director of the Lumen Christi Academies, you know, I'm responsible for 7 schools that have been merged into a network, and kind of like what might happen in the corporate world whenever there's a merger, you know, different folks are coming at it from different angles, and oftentimes people feel that their autonomies are being infringed upon, and one of the things that we've been able to forge some success this first year is to really empower the leaders of our seven schools to be part of the change that's being brought through Lumen Christi Academies, to be contributors in the innovative practices that we're allowing to take root across our network. And the more folks feel empowered, the more buy-in they have for this vision that they are co-creating, as opposed to it being handed down to them. So it's been great just to see the organic development of a leadership team of these leaders who historically have worked as in isolated silos, and really coming together and kind of leveraging their talents to develop a greater good.
Now, Father Nuzzi said something about budgets.
Father Nuzzi said, "But your budget is a statement of mission. You show me your budget, and I'll be able to see what is important to you." So it's a great filter for us to see. You know what? Where are we investing our dollars? If we really think personalized learning is important, or we want to differentiate instruction, well, how are we investing those dollars? And no different than in the corporate world. You know, if a certain approach is important, then you're going to be investing your resources towards that end.
Now, you did something early in your career, and I guess you do it throughout your career, with a deck of cards.
Ah, yeah.
And this is an important lesson even for our audience, regardless going into a new company or whatever. But why don't you share that story with us?
Yeah, I used to do this with my fifth graders. And, you know, my fifth graders are coming into at the time, West Oakland was a difficult place, under-resourced, a lot of challenges in their lives. And I did this activity where I had a few kids pretend to be playing a game of cards, and I stacked the deck. And some had a better hand than others. And I said, such is life. You know, you're going to be dealt some hands that are good, and some are bad. What you do with that hand is up to you, how you play it. And it's no different than the teachers or the leaders that I have or in your corporate offices. You know, we all are given a situation, and what we do with that situation is up to us. And we have to be able to take control of the situation, use our gifts and talents, and then move forward in a positive direction and have a firm belief in ourselves and in those around us on our team that we can take whatever situation we have and make the best of it.
Where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Impacting students' lives, impacting teachers' lives, impacting families' lives. So 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, I'm going to be always an educator at heart, bringing equity where it's not.
And with all the people that you've seen in your lifetime, those that are happiest, what's the common thread that you've seen in their lives?
Those who are happy have a clear awareness of their gifts and talents and are leveraging them each and every day to help those around them.
Well, we're out of time. We've been talking to a rising star in our educational system, Rodney Pierre-Antoine. Thank you very much for your time. Remember, if you tuned in late, you can listen to this and past shows by downloading podcasts by going to our website, thementorsradio.com. Thank you for listening. We will be back again next weekend at this time for the next edition of the Mentors Radio Show. Until then, this is Tom Laurie signing off for today. Remember to be all that you can be and keep the candle lit for all who struggle in the darkness.
It's been The Mentors, where remarkable CEOs challenge your thinking about life and business. To get more information about the program or a sponsor, to download a podcast of today's show, or to leave a question for our host, go to thementorsradio.com. That's www.thementorsradio.com. The preceding program, copyright CBJ LLC, all rights reserved.